Welcome to Four Glasses to Finish. I'm Dave.
And I'm Ray.
And this is a podcast where we drink four glasses of wine.
And we try to finish them.
Hello and good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon. This is Four Glasses to Finish. I don't know when they're listening. When are they listening?
I don't know. If you're listening to a wine podcast first thing in the morning, then you are just like me, actually.
I was going to say, my morning commute is riddled with wine podcasts.
Yeah, that's, I used to, every time I'd, this was back when I drove into work. Nowadays, I work from home most of the time, which is great. But when I was driving into work, like, I'd always be putting on like Levy Dalton or Wine for Normal People or something like that. I love the little, like, I don't know what that sound is to start their song.
Yeah,
sounds like somebody's typing on a typewriter.
Wonderfully produced song. It's great.
I wonder if that is using a typewriter.
Yeah, for that. I don't know.
If they are, that person is unbelievably talented.
Yeah, ours just has a lame guitar picker.
Yeah, that guy sucks. I mean, but that's what we could afford. He was free, so.
And that guy is me, by the way. We never really talked about this, but yeah, I wrote the intro, and maybe one day we'll produce the shit out of it, and we'll get like really cool sounds with it.
I don't know. I kind of feel like sometimes you don't want to do that because what if you do it and then it almost sounds the same?
Yeah. And you're like,
I did all that for nobody notices the difference. It's like when you get your hair cut or your hair dyed or something and you're like, how I look. It's like, you kind of look like yesterday. It's like, I dyed that. And like, I thought you were dark brown hair before. You're like, no.
You
it
don't
was
even
lighter.
Know
it
me.
It was lighter.
You don't even know me. That's a really good point, man.
I've done it.
Well, so, yeah, so we listen. So whatever you're doing, whether you're running, whether you're...
Don't be doing that.
Doing dishes, driving, whatever you're doing, I hope this podcast finds you well.
Driving and drinking.
So welcome back, everyone, to driving and drinking. Not drinking and driving. And then drinking.
Yeah, because you got a bottle in your little cup holder. You ever notice that, like, some bottles fit? Some bottles fit pretty well.
That's right. It's... Dude,
I don't recommend that by any means.
No. But you know, when you go to the wine store,
they do fit perfectly.
Because you don't want the bottles to roll around, so you put it in the cup holder. Yeah,
clearly it's not for Pinot lovers though.
Because
Pinot bottles never fit there.
Or Chardonnay.
It's like a Bordeaux bottle or something.
Can't do
it. It could be an Alianico bottle.
Well, speaking of which, this is perfect segue to the topic at hand. Today we are talking about
driving and drinking.
Driving and drinking with Aglianico del Vulture. So the grape is Aglianico.
I thought it was Aglianico
del Vulture. Del Vulture, yes. Yes, no,
it's not.
Vulture. Vulture.
Oh my God, I've been saying it wrong all this time.
I am here to correct you.
It's named after a bird. For sure. I mean, it's totally named after a bird.
So del means of the, so that means this grape belongs to the vultures.
It belongs
to them.
It's a scavenger grape.
Well, Vulture, so this is Aglianico, right? And Aglianico is grown in other places. This is an Italian grape. And this specific grape is specifically from the region of Basilicata. And Basilicata is all the way in southern Italy. It's literally, if you view Italy as a boot, it's the arch of the boot. It's between Calabria on the left, which is the toe, and Puglia, which is the heel. And Vulture is actually an extinct volcano where this grape is grown. And and that volcano definitely, I mean, we'll get into that too, but the volcano clearly has a huge influence on this Aglianico, on this grape. So we have four wines that we're gonna talk through tonight,
and we will finish them.
Yeah, we were just saying how we haven't really been saying if we finished the wines or not. We started off doing that, then we didn't really do it. We're gonna get back to it, so we will update you all while you're running, while you're commuting, whatever you're doing, on the
driving
progress of our glass, the contents of our glass. Yeah. So this first Aglianico del Vulture is okay, so this is my poetic justice because I mispronounced Cinsault. So now every time I have an Italian wine, I'm like, I'm going to pronounce it perfect.
Really? I'm waiting for some like Italian fan to be like, you fucked that up.
No, they won't. They won't. I promise. So, Ray, why don't you talk us through the first wine? What do we got? This is a Ray pick.
All right. So it's a Ray pick coming up. That means it's going to be one of the best wines.
Our wines will duke it out tonight. We'll see.
This is Pipoli. I think that's how you say it. It's funny because their label actually has one of the P's backwards.
Yeah.
So maybe they want it pronounced differently. But if you pronounce Pipoli backwards, I guess that's Ilopip. So it could be that.
Ilopip.
Ilopip. Pipoli Ilopip.
So you guys should play this podcast backwards and see if
it's like Pipoli the old Beatles album. You know? Got to send these out on vinyl. So this is Pipoli. It's 100% Aglianico from Del Vulture or Vulture. I'm just going to say Vulture.
Vulture.
It's from the Vulture area. And this grows in, you know, the tufo, the volcanic soils that are in the area at higher elevations. Again, extinct volcano. And actually, I mean, from that standpoint, you know, the other two Aglianicos that most folks know, Taurasi and Del Taberno, which I'm probably butchering that name.
So Taurasi is from Naples, from off of Vesuvio.
Yep.
And where's the other one from? Still from Campania.
Yeah. I think it's like Volturi, where the mountain is the name, mm-hmm. Taberno.
Same thing.
Again, probably messing that up. But those two are in Campania, this one Basilicata, mm-hmm. But all of them are Aglianico. Although, you know, Aglianico del Volturi, 100% Aglianico, whereas like Taurasi, you know, you can have up to, I think it's 15% non-Aglianico, so they'll blend it with, you know, Primitivo or something like that to kind of make it a little lighter, fresher if they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Here it's 100%. Another interesting difference is, Volturi started DOC. The other two are DOCG. Mm-hmm. But, you know, more recently, I think, what was it?
2010, it became DOCG.
So DOCG for the Superiore. And the difference being that you have to have 3 years from harvest, 1 year in bottle, 1 year in the barrel, at least 1 year in the barrel, 1 year mm-hmm. in the bottle.
Mm-hmm. And any combination thereof.
Honestly, it's kind of hard to age it in bottle, then go to barrel. But so I probably should have said that flip-flopped. But
can you imagine?
You get the point.
Can you imagine?
they put it all in bottle. They're like, take it back out.
Maybe
put
people they did it because they did the backwards P. So maybe they did it in bottle first. They did it backwards.
Man, people, that's what, and it's amazing that they do that and it only costs, you know, $25 or whatever.
Yeah.
I will say Aglianico, from wherever you get it, is a very good QPR. I mm-hmm. mean, the quality price ratio here is one of the better ones out there. You're typically talking, what, 20, 25 bucks?
Some for of them a DOC, get, like, yep,
yeah.
For a DOC.
And even if you go to like, I mean, Taurasi is probably the most expensive of the Aglianico areas. Mm. I think you can still find Taurasi in like $40, $50 price point easily.
Even though it's DOCG, you could.
Yeah, and you look at like other great grapes that have that ageability, that structure, and where the price point is, and I'm like, well, you're looking at, you know, Nebbiolo, Cabernet Sauvignon. Well,
they actually, of Nebbiolo, like, they call this the Barolo of the South. And if I could just do a brief plug, shameless plug.
I thought you were going to say Nebs. But I was like, that's cool. Nebs. It's like his little brother, Nebs.
Nebs. I actually wrote an article. So a friend of mine, Jason Wilson, has a newsletter called Everyday Drinking. He's a wonderful writer, wonderful dude, great guy, a good friend of mine.
Godforsaken Grapes. Godforsaken
Grapes. He's written also The Cider Revival and Booze Hound. He's now a writer for Wine Enthusiast. He just had a feature in Wine Enthusiast, I think like a week ago. This is a guy, I just want to say real briefly, he brings honesty and sincerity to the wine world. There's a lot of bullshit out there. There's a lot of people, a lot of,
It doesn't hurt that he's in Jersey either.
Yeah. He's a Jersey guy through and through, Phillies fan. I hope that doesn't deter anyone from being a fan of him, but Phillies, Eagles fan. But there's a lot of pretension in wine, and he brings a lot of just honesty to it. He graciously enough trusted me to write an article that he actually published through his newsletter, his online newsletter, Everyday Drinking. Please subscribe. And I wrote it all about Aglianico, and it's called Don't Call It the Barolo of the South. Because a lot of things about that premise kind of bothers me, because Nebbiolo is Nebbiolo, Aglianico is Aglianico, and there's a whole like northern southern Italian discrepancy. There's a lot of northern Italians, I would call it, like look down literally and figuratively on the South, and I just think using a northern Italian grape to compare a southern Italian grape to it, I think it just doesn't do it justice. There are similarities between Nebbiolo and Aglianico, but I hope that Aglianico is interpreted and experienced and tasted on its own terms and not in comparison to another grape. We'll drink.
And I did read the article too. It was a wonderful article. I think you touched on some parts that were more like personal in there. It wasn't just like dry Aglianico talk, although yeah. You know Aglianico is actually wet,
yeah,
so it's it'd be hard to be dry. But you know it,
that's so funny. Yeah, we talk about this wine's dry. No, it's not. It's wet.
Wet. It's totally wet. It's leaking all over the place. But no, it was a very good article. And
thank you.
You know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed kind of getting some insight into your time spent in Italy.
Yeah.
And, you know, your mindset and the things that kind of went on while you were there. Because read the article. It's interesting. You'll probably have questions for him afterwards. So definitely go take a look at Everyday Drinking. Mm-hmm. Take a look at the article. And
I think we set this up well enough. Maybe if there's one thing I can add just about the Vulture volcano, the volcanic soil, it is volcanic ash soil. And one of the unique characteristics of the soil there is that it is porous and absorbent. So it really doesn't rain during the summer at all. And it gets really hot. But since it's so porous, the soil acts like a water reserve that still gives nutrients to the vines. And since it's higher elevation, it doesn't really get as super ripe and alcoholic as most wines in a similar climate because it's higher elevation. So Aglianico typically from the Vulture is quite balanced and also a bit mineral driven. So I'm looking forward to see how this comes across in the glass, because both of these two wines, I think I might have had the Peepoli once before.
Ilo Peep.
But I haven't had the other one, so I'm excited to get into this, right?
Well,
so.
You know, we've been blabbing our mouths for way too long, and cheers. Dave.
Wine one.
So, you know, common with Aglianico, super dark. I mean, you're not really seeing your fingers through it. Maybe a smidge. You can see that there's some shape of a hand underneath, maybe with this. You sure as hell can't see your fingertips.
I would say probably at the rim you can, but
yeah,
like at this.
Yeah, at the very end.
Yeah.
Very deep color, you know, nose on it. Aglianico, you know, I know they call it Barolo of the South, but I almost think that it reminds me a lot of the Bordeaux varietals, where it's like it's got that robustness, this like chocolate almost, tobacco, black fruits. It's masculine. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think of Barolo, I think of a wine that is you know, very... I think we talked about it in one of the prior episodes about how Nebbiolo can sometimes play to parts that you normally think of as Pinot Noir-like, and Pinot Noir is typically very soft and elegant and, you know, feminine and just more ethereal. And I kind of look at, you know, Cabernet or Merlot, the Bordeaux blends, as being more bold and brash and big, powerful. And I think Aglianico fits right in with there. And the ageability here is fantastic. You can age these things for 20 years, you know. And
definitely.
Again, $30 price point, $25 price point, to age 30 years. Unfortunately, we're not drinking a 30-year-old Aglianico here.
Wish we were, geez.
This one in particular is, I think, 2018. Yeah, 2018. And so the Pipoli, it's you know, it's in the volcanic soils of Mount Vulture. The wine's been fermented in small vats. It spends approximately 10 to 12 months in oak. It was kind of interesting, like the website said 10 to 12 months in barriques, but I think on the back of the bottle it actually says stainless steel and two-year-old barriques. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
the joys of finding details on tech sheets.
We've discussed this before. We dedicate an entire episode to it though.
But you know, it's very classic, I think, on the nose. A lot of black fruit. Again, it's a big wine. I haven't taken a sip yet, but I'm about to do so.
Yeah. It's big.
It's big.
It's a big tannic wine, acid, dark fruits. But there is still, there's still a lightness to it. Like, it is big, it's bold, it's acidic, or it's tannic. It's got dark fruits, but there's like a playfulness to it. There's like a, like, it's not all just like.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it kind of reminds me of when you have Super Tuscans. And when you have a Super Tuscan, a lot of times, you know, when you have a Bordeaux blend, one of the things that can sometimes detract from it, if you want to call it, is the heaviness, the weightiness. And when you have a Super Tuscan, a lot of times there's a little Sangiovese in there, and that acidity of the Sangiovese like
lifts it up. I think that's
and
exactly
I think there's a very similar
here.
Characteristic here. Absolutely. In Aglianico. Mm-hmm. It like lifts it with the acidity. It's not overpowering acidity, but you know, given how much power it has, that little pop of acidity is just like it's going to pair great with something like a steak, a ribeye, or something like that, or a hamburger. I mean, we actually did a little bit of
Shake Shack.
We were talking about all these different burger types of fighting them out. We've done Five Guys before. We haven't done Smash Burger yet. I don't even know if a Wayback Burger exists around here, but
Jack's today was Wayback.
Jack's Wayback. Yeah. But we did a Shake Shack today, which was fitting. Because, you know, you guys will be listening to this way after it. But today is actually Alon and I's anniversary. And fittingly, when we first met, our first date, meeting anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
First date was the great and fantastic McDonald's.
They smash burger?
Double cheese.
Is that smash burger?
And, you know what, though? I will
Were they
say
like
it,
burger molds?
I think
like,
they might have taken the cheese from there. Yeah. I think the cheese has a lot of similarity.
That's great.
Which was good, you know? Yeah. I mean, give it some grief, but I'm like, you know what? It got this whole thing started, so
yeah,
it wasn't totally bad. But yeah, so, you know, I think the wine is characteristic of Aglianico del Vulture. I'm butchering that. I should just keep with Vulture.
Just say it how you say it.
Aglianico of the caw. No, that's actually a crow. So what is a vulture sound?
Like? Yeah, I don't think they want us to
I don't
say.
Think they make a noise.
No, they don't want us to hear. Like, I don't know. Gonna go,
all
had,
I know is
haven't
that.
Haven't had enough wine to mimic a vulture.
When Alon and I were first going out, we were getting ready for church the
Aww.
One day. We're getting ready for church. Don't worry. The story ends with me not going.
I was going to say.
So we're getting ready for church. I'm outside. And I thought, you know, there's trees and stuff. I thought an acorn or something, pine cone, fell off and hit me on the back of my head. It was not.
Was it a bird poop?
It was a turkey vulture poop. I mean, that thing was huge. It was a huge shit.
Oh, my God. And that's good luck. That's good luck when bird poops
maybe
on you.
It was for the
good
vulture.
Luck.
Or, yeah. But it wasn't for me.
My God.
So
It was so heavy.
Needless to say, I went into the house, cleaned the crap off, but it was like, I'm not going to church now. I'm already like 10 minutes late trying to clean this vulture crap off.
You've already been desecrated. There is no hope for your salvation.
I'm like, I was blessed.
From above. That was your church. Better than this. That was your church.
But yeah, turkey vulture, which, you know, it's a vulture.
Well, I'm actually glad to be celebrating your meeting anniversary. And well, I think it was very appropriate that we had burgers as well. But I also think on the nose, I get a bit of florality and also like a little bit. And I think if I had to say, I would say there's a little bit of a lavender note to this wine. Like behind the fruit, it's there. It's like a hint of lavender.
I could kind of see that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely like this dried herbal note, and it's that lifted scent is something I associate with lavender. Is, you know, lavender has like a lifted floral scent versus like hibiscus, I think, is a deeper tone.
Yeah, totally.
Lavender, I think, is a brighter tone. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you're listening to this and being like, what are these two fruitcakes talking about? Go get yourself some hibiscus and a lavender and just sniff the two of them.
And so can we also talk about that? Because I really do think, you know, in the beginning, when you hear people talking about wine jargon, you're like, shut up. Like, are you telling me that this wine smells like that? Get stuffed. Like, just go away. But I think, like, getting into wine and trying to like build up my own taste vocabulary and associations with the wines, it makes life like more fun. You become more aware of like taste and flavors and aromas. And
it's better than a psychiatrist.
Yeah, right? You're experiencing a lot more of like, Ray and I were just talking earlier, like a lychee. I've never had one before, but a lot of people talk about, you know, when they talk about Sauvignon Blanc, there's like a lychee note to it. And I was like, what is a lychee? And I looked it up. It's a fruit. So like last summer, I bought a bunch of lychees and I tried them. And I was like, I've never had one before. Ray has, but I didn't. So it is fun. If on the outside listening in, you know, it might make you feel a little like, I don't know what they're talking about. And then you get a little defensive, like that's BS. Why are they doing that? But if you actually try to, like, you know, experience those tastes and flavors, it's really fun.
Just wait. If I ever get that cat we've been waiting on, I'm going to let you taste cat piss so that you know exactly what New Zealand Sauv Blanc did.
Thanks, Ray. Just blind me on know. Right? Just blind me on it. I don't want to know what it is.
Close your eyes, Dave.
Drink this cat piss. Is this a New Zealand Sauv Blanc? No, it's cat piss. You like it?
It's close though, right?
So I think this is good. I'm actually really
impressed with like that lifted note on here, and just I totally want to eat like steak meat, not like hamburger meat or anything, but I really want to have a steak with this. I feel like it would pair really well with a steak.
And I want to talk about the tannins. The tannins, they're there. They're like medium plus, but they're not grippy. I think they're like, they like glide through your palate. They're not astringent at all, right? They're very pleasant tannins.
Are you going to finish your glass or are you going to save some for then, like, because I kind of feel like I want to taste it.
I'm going to finish
after I've had
the others.
A couple of other ones, but I have probably two solid sips in here.
Let's compare. I have a little
you have a little more.
A little more than you.
Yeah, but we'll save it. Usually do, because, you know, you got to drive home.
I do have to drive home.
And I thought this episode was going to be about driving and drinking, though.
Driving and drinking.
Yeah.
All right.
Next wine.
So next wine, this is our Star Wars wine, our R2-D2 wine.
R2-D2.
May the Force be with you, Ray.
R4-D4.
So immediately, all right, so this next wine is...
I actually was doing that like last week or something. I was trying to find other R2 units, and I didn't get very
far. R4, that's Obi-Wan's. Yeah, that's Obi-Wan's astromech.
But I started going on a Wookiee, like, reading about Wookiees. And
so you abandoned your astromech research?
Yeah, I was on like the astromech for like a little bit, and then I went off onto a Wookiee tangent, and it was like, oh no. And then I didn't go back. So
until next time. You really left us a cliffhanger. So this next wine is a producer named Elena Fucci. This is her wine. It's her flagship wine called Titolo. It's 13.5 alcohol. This wine to me is probably the most natural wine that we'll have today. Mainly also because I think you'd appreciate this, Ray. This wine is aged in amphora.
Huh.
It has the fermentation in amphora. Then it's pressed with the soft pressure, and the wine goes back into the amphora to finish malolactic fermentation and aging. So I think there's no oak on this at all. So I think this is like one of the things that we've discussed before, that amphora, right, doesn't it imparts a lot less, no flavor really. So it kind of, it's a more honest expression of the grape.
There's a rusticity to this, this wine compared to the other one, but I don't know if I'd really say, I mean, I guess you could say it's got natural, but like, you know, a lot of times when I think of like a quote unquote natty wine, mm-hmm. I'm thinking of like a negative connotation of like, it's kind of mousy. It's mm-hmm. a little bit funky.
This doesn't have that.
This doesn't have that. Mm-hmm. It's just got this rustic, charming quality to mm-hmm. me, to it, I think.
Oh, that makes me happy. That makes me, because I really love Elena Fucci. I think for Basilicata and Aglionico del Vulture in general, I think she's...
The vulture.
She's done...
We should watch the Michael Keaton Birdman. We should be watching Birdman
No cuts. No cuts. Yeah. We should not edit it.
I think he's a vulture.
Yeah.
And some kind of bio.
That movie has not one cut in it, right? Isn't that the whole thing about the film? There's no cuts in it.
That's what they say.
I
wasn't there to prove it.
Yeah, we should record a podcast
the good
listening
folks
to
from
it.
Price Waterhouse Coopers though can attest to.
What else about this wine? It goes through amphora aging for 18 months.
Ooh, this is good.
And then another additional 12 months of bottle aging.
It's kind of rich.
Mm-hmm. What do you get on the nose first? That's like you said, it's rustic.
Yeah, the rustic component has like it's this note, like a bitter chocolate. Yeah. Like you know when you smell bitter chocolate, and it's like a bitter. I know people bitter is a taste, not a smell per se. But if you've smelled bitter chocolate or something else that's been bitter, mm-hmm. like radicchio or something like that.
It does.
There's
have
a
that.
Smell that to it that you're like, this is probably going to be bitter,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what what chemical compound is producing that, but it kind of has a smell that makes you think it might be a little like bitter, but in the same way of bitter chocolate, where it's an appealing bitter, it's not an off-putting bitter.
Yeah.
And when I tasted it, it kind of did have that to it, but it also had that richness of bitter chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have bitter chocolate on your tongue, on your palate, it kind of really like coats it. And I kind of got that same sense here. It's not as light and lifting as the Pipolo was. This is a little more like expansive and rich.
What's great about this too, that even though there's no oak tannins to it, the tannins are a lot more grippy than the other one.
Yeah.
Than the Pipolo.
Definitely more grippy.
Or Pipoli, sorry.
Pipoli. I think this is, you know, I'd be interested to see how the aging goes with it because the rusticity makes me think maybe it won't hold up as well. But on the flip side, the body and structure makes me think it'll hold up much better.
See, that's such a great balance that it's got to this, right? Yeah.
Got another one in your bag for like 2010, 2005, something like that?
I wish I did.
Oh, Dave, you came underprepared.
I did, man. I totally wish I did. I love this wine. And, you know, I think Elena Fucci is bringing, she's one of the wine, I mean, all these producers, I think, Aglianico del Vulture, it's, you know, they're such an honesty and integrity to how they make the wine, but she's kind of the superstar standout right now.
So is it a woman winemaker?
Yes. So she, I guess her family had the estate since 1960, and they were about to sell or just not have it in the family anymore. And then at the last minute, I want to say in the 90s, I'm not 100% sure when she decided to take it over, but it's been relatively recently, and she completely turned it around and in a very relatively short amount of time made it kind of a superstar wine. I know.
Now, this isn't their, like, is this their highest level one?
This is not their highest one, but this is their flagship for sure. And I think for a DOC wine, I mean, don't tell me this is not going to stand up to a Vino Nobile di Montepulciano or even some Brunello.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is talking about QPR. This drink's way above its price point. It was coming in hot at like $34.
It's interesting because there's a couple producers of Nero.
Davola?
Yeah. And I'm just thinking like Southern variety. And we were doing a little bit of a tasting of...
Romitorio.
Well, they're Calabrian wines, but I mess all their names up. There's like one starts with a G.
Gulfi?
No. That would be Sicilian.
Oh.
But the Calabrian wines that we tried, the grape variety was, I think it was like Grignolino or something.
Grignolino. Grignolino is another one that's super tannic, but also super light.
It kind of reminds me where like some of these have quite a wide spectrum. I think Aglianico tends to be a little bit more, I can't say I've really had one that's super light or super fresh. They all have a decent amount of structure and body on them, mm-hmm. some lighter than others, but even when it is quote unquote light, it's you would never mistake it for a Pinot Noir or something like that.
Yeah.
That's crazy,
they're doing Grignolino in Calabria. That's wild.
So it's you wind up having, and I'm pretty sure that's the grape variety. Mm-hmm. But it makes me think about these Southern Italian varietals, wine varietals that we've had that, you don't see them as frequently. You know, mm-hmm. when you go into a store and you find Aglianico, how many Aglianicos do you find? Two, three?
Not many. I mean, depending on the wine store, but typically, you wouldn't see this in like...
You're not finding 10 Aglianicos.
Yeah, yeah. I went very far away to buy this Elena Fucci.
You went to California.
No, I would have gotten everything.
You could have got a California Aglianico to try back here.
Ray is disappointed at I didn't bring him enough wines.
You didn't bring me enough wines.
So the Elena Fucci, yay or nay?
Oh, definitely a yay.
Yes, I don't know. For that article, I did like I went through a rabbit hole of drinking.
How many wines did you have for the article?
I mean, we did five. But before that, I did my own.
25.
I did more on my own. But we actually drank five. We tasted five together, me and Jason. But one was, we got rid of it because it was not, we didn't like it. So these were the four.
Just like really funky or
I think not? Either there was something wrong with the bottle. It was just bad. Mm. It was like not pleasant at all. But there are some other wines that were just like so good. But if you check out the article, you'll see I have four wines that I did tasting notes for. So if you guys are interested, and all those wines except for Elena Fucci are like 25 and less.
Yeah, I really like this. I mean, there is a a typicity I'm seeing between the two of these. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what the next two kind of do. But definitely noticing, that characteristic of it's bold, big, full-bodied, but there's a, pop of acidity. It still has got that lift. Even with the Elena Fucci, it's bigger than the Pipolo, but or Pipoli.
There's like a playfulness with it.
Yeah,
I like just to use an adjective.
Prettiness to it.
Does it, side note, does it? To me, like when I smelled Elena Fucci, it had a Pax, like Pax wines. It reminded me of some of like his Syrahs. Like it had that rustic quality. It didn't have like the bloodiness or the...
I could kind of see that.
There's a warmth to it that's like... that reminded me of PAX a bit.
Yeah, I could kind of see that. And I mean, I don't know if
I really don't want to be stretching for that, but that was
compare
my...
Compare it too much because I think the differences in the grape varieties that are in the, you know, making up the wines that... Mm-hmm. From Alianico del Vulture and
Pax of Syrah.
Pax of Syrah or even
Gamay.
He does Gamay and other varieties there. I kind of feel like while there is that rusticity, which remember, he does a lot of fermentations in cement. And we talked about cement in a prior episode and how there's a lot of wines that in cement, for some reason, they give this like rustic, like, very much what you expect to taste if you were just to eat the fruit and it really didn't go through as
unaffected.
Yeah, really. Unaffected almost.
What's the amphora then?
Well, that's clay. So it's still a breathable vessel, you know, versus a breathable yet, you know, more or less inert vessel versus like oak, which is imparting stuff, or steel, which is imparting nothing. It's like, well, it still allows oxygen, but you're not really getting flavor from clay or cement.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, some form of oxidation, but you're not imparting, you know, wood tannin or char or anything like that that you would get from a barrel. But it is allowing that oxygen, you know, passage. So, and granted, I'm not sure if they like epoxy the inside or something like that.
How
and
they
then,
treat
then
it.
There won't be any passage of oxygen, but I suspect that they are not doing that.
Yeah. I would be inclined to think that too. We took a brief break. I edited this out so you listeners, while you were doing your runs or doing your dishes, you didn't hear. One of the wines that we had lined up actually had a fault and it immediately came out in the glass. So it smelled like wet cardboard.
Yeah.
And grapes and fruit.
it was corked. Which is unfortunate, but it happens. And, you know, it was worthwhile mentioning that, you know, luckily Dave brought a backup bottle.
I always do that. You know
and,
why?
It's even better that they were both superiores. Yeah. So the backup bottles.
Because we have, so right now we had two DOCs.
Actually, I had tested that bottle and I knew it was corked and I was like, I'm going to get this sucker and bring out another.
It worked, right? Your plan worked. So we had two DOCs and it does work out. And the next two wines are going to be DOCGs. We'll talk about the differences. I know we touched on that in the beginning. And I did bring a second bottle or like an extra bottle, but not just in case one had like a fault. That's not why I brought it. I bring it because...
You wanted to drink it after the show.
No, because I don't know. Whenever I pick wines for us, I'm like...
Drinking and driving. You wanted to bring it while you're away home.
Trying to tell you something. He never listens. This guy never listens to me. No, I literally brought it.
Join the club.
Because, Ray, what did I ask you when I got here? I was like, I don't know what to open.
I don't remember. Which I don't one? Listen to you.
You didn't listen. Case in point. I didn't know what to open. So the one that the extra bottle that I brought, Ray actually did try. He's had it before. So that's why we decided not to open that one. But I'm glad I did. So that we're going to have that last. That'll be the wine that we have last. But so this next wine is our first DOCG, Denominazione di Origine Controllata Garantita. So that is the...
Say that 10 times fast.
I just had to throw that in there. So we did touch on that in the beginning of the podcast. DOCG, the difference is that it's got to be aged for 3 years, at least one in barrel, one in bottle. It could be 2 years in barrel, one in bottle. It could be one in barrel, two in bottle, whatever the wine maker chooses. It's got to be an alcohol of 13.5. And it's got to be a certain elevation on Vulture. I'm not exactly sure what that is. It might be very similar to the DOC, but I don't remember what that is precisely. And as we mentioned before, it was awarded... Vulture was awarded the DOCG status in 2010. So it's relatively new. So this wine is made by Re Manfredi. It's from the Vigneto or the vineyard Serpara. This is a 2015. It was macerated on its skins for 15 to 20 days, and it was fermented in French oak. It was aged for 12 months in 50% new and 50% second use oak, and it was bottled without filtration. So this this is, I'm assuming this is going to be an oaky wine.
And I don't know. I've been sniffing this while you've been yapping the whole time, and I'd have to say I'm impressed. It has a so this is 2015, so it definitely has a couple more years than the two that we just had before. But I don't know. There's I almost think of it as like a creaminess to it. There's like this,
on the palate,
On the nose.
On the nose.
It's like this. You know, I said richness.
Oh my god,
Elena Fuki.
It's like
Fuchi.
A
Fuki.
Fuki. Fuki.
Fucky. No. That's definitely not right.
Elena Fuchi, yes.
And that richness was more like the bitter chocolate, I thought. But this one is,
it's
more
like a sauce.
Yeah, like a saucy cream sauce or something like that. You know, it's got this richness, but it's very...
Oh my god.
If you've had wines that are Chardonnays that, you know, went through malolactic, you know, it kind of makes that acid a little more subtle and a little less tart,
yeah,
and a little more milk type acid, mm-hmm, versus apple type acid. And this I think has more of that like milk creaminess type acid. On the nose, I feel like it's gonna have that.
Dare I say that this is like tertiary yet? Is it getting any tertiariness?
It might be.
Yeah.
I mean, these things. If there's one thing that you see here, I'm like, this wine is 8 years old. It doesn't smell like it's anywhere close to being mature.
No.
I'm like, another 10 years on it, maybe it'll get there. I don't know, but I will say it smells delicious. It
smells wonderful.
It just seems like it could hold up a lot longer.
Cheers, buddy. R3, D3.
Beep, beep, beep.
Woo, 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 woo. Woo, woo.
Now, all this studying of Wookiees, but I'm not about to do that because that was pretty close, I think.
Okay, that's got to recover from that.
This, to me, tastes the most expensive.
Yeah. And talking about Bordeaux before, this is Bordeaux-esque to me.
Very Bordeaux-esque.
But it's still got that Italian.
I don't know if you'd confuse quality. It for a Bordeaux, mm-hmm, because it has that lifted note that I'm like, I find more with
this is really
stuff
good.
With Sangiovese or something. A lot of the Italian varieties do have a little bit of that, you know, lifted acidity. Sometimes it's even like a little bit of VA, but it's in a way that's not off-putting.
Wow. I kind of just want to like sit with this because it's so good.
I almost feel like I want to have steaks, but I don't have steaks here.
You don't have steak?
I don't have steak.
Right. I should have brought a steak.
You
wanted me to bring another Elena Fuchi
Costco's
wine.
Costco's closed. I know they have like tons of big hunks of beef.
I mean, this smells wonderful. Wow. Oh, I just want to sit with this.
It's this one, whereas I thought the first one was lifted, the second one had a rich, you know, bitter chocolate note. This one, to me, seems the most put together. It doesn't have any holes. There's the mid palate's just as balanced and complex as the nose would suggest, and the finish is nice and long. There's doesn't feel like there's any part in there that kind of is, you know, off versus any other component.
Yeah.
They're all in balance.
I'd like to try this like new, like what this was when it was like, you know, 3 years after its release or after its vintage. I think that would be interesting because I want to know how much the age has kind of rounded these notes, but it hasn't been that long. So, but it's really
still a lot of black fruit. I don't really get, I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, maybe like a red raspberry sauce or something where, you know, it's reduced and concentrated. And so you don't get that tart. You get that little bit of tartness of the red fruit, but it's much more viscous and sappy.
And you said, like, you know, sometimes you want to have like a big bold cab or something like that for dessert. Mm-hmm. I could totally see that for this. Like 100%.
You could reduce it and put it on ice cream.
Oh.
It'd probably be delicious.
My God.
I'm thinking, like, you know when you take balsamic?
Yeah, and have you done that?
I'm like, yeah, it's good. But this would be better, I think.
Yeah, so I have, I do have like the 12-year, 15-year, whatever age balsamic. I spent like $110 on this bottle. That I, you know.
You sure it was 110, not 115 or 113 or something like that? Was it 110 exactly?
Maybe it was like 111. Yeah.
Now that you're
109.92. But I want to have you and Alana over, and I would love to, you know, I wanted to feature that.
Just drink balsamic.
Just drink that. No, what would be cool, because balsamic is one of those things that, like, you can put on so many dishes to elevate it. So, like, you could have it with salad, you could have it with pasta, you could have it with meat, you could have it on dessert. Like, just every course, I want to feature balsamic. And, like, that would be a really fun thing for us to do.
Yeah. And if you haven't had, like, real balsamic, not the stuff that you buy in your local grocery store, more than likely. Mm-hmm.
Unless you get lucky and they have good stuff.
Yeah, if you've got a specialty Italian market, you probably can maybe source it. But you're not going to find it in your Wegmans or your ShopRite. And but once you've had it, you're like, oh.
That's amazing.
That is what balsamic's supposed to taste like.
And listen, I know I'm casually saying I spent $111.50 on this like little bottle of balsamic vinegar. But I've only ever done that once in my life. And this was worth every penny. And when this bottle's done, I'm going to keep this bottle for as long as I can, because I don't know when the next time will be, when I'll be able to afford another bottle.
You don't realize, like, they age that for so long. Yeah. That's how you get that concentrated, like, syrupiness to the balsamic.
There's more flavor in, like, a drop of that than in, like, most complete meals.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. I think a lot of times when people are using balsamic, it's like you're pouring bunches of balsamic in there as if it's like any other vinegar. It's like when you're using real balsamic, it's like a drop.
Yeah,
it's the concentration of flavor there is so potent, you don't need a whole lot on there.
So we'll do that one time. And just, you know, I think that's why this wine, this Re Manfredi that we're drinking, is so good, because it's such a concentrated flavor. I just really like what you said. I don't think I can say anything else. You said it's the most well put together wine.
So delicious. I'll probably have a second glass after this.
It's the most complete of the wine, of the wines that we've had. Oh, man, this is an experience.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite one so far. And I've, like you said, I've had the Grifalco before, so it'll be interesting. I remember liking it.
To see it compared to this.
But this so far has been my favorite. But you know what I will say about the whole tasting thus far is the typicity across the board. You could never drink this and, you know, confuse it for too many other grapes. They are pretty similar. They're different enough that everyone has its own little, you know, personality. But what I love the most is they all taste great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still can't believe that you can buy these wines at the price points that they are.
I will say this wine was definitely the most expensive.
What was this?
I feel like it was in the 60s.
$110?
No, it was in the 60s. It was $108.61. No, this is like in the $60 bottle range, and I picked it up because I went to go get the Elena Fucci for this tasting, and I saw, you know, I realized that I only had DOCs, and they only had like two or three bottles of this, of the DOCG, and I was like, I gotta get, you know, the Superiore, I gotta try it.
This wine's awesome.
Yeah, it's really...
I mean, they've all been awesome. I would drink them all happily again, but if I was going to buy one to, like, you know, kind of collect a couple bottles, have two or three.
You would have this.
This would
don't you think, though, like, even, like, it does this wine a disservice to associate it with a different, like, the Barolo of the South. Just fucking...
Completely different.
Yeah, like, just call it, like, why would, like, Cab or Pinot, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't be like, I don't know. I just think it's such a derogatory way to talk about it.
You know, as I was doing a little research on here, though... I was reading something Ian Doggett had put out, and he was talking about how, you know, a lot of times Alianico, he's a big fan, and he talks about how, you know, Alianico almost like owns its terroir. You know, it a lot of like Pinot Noir, people know that as a fickle grape. It very much any little change from what it loves.
Oh my God.
is devastating.
sounds like me.
Where, yeah, definitely it's a Dave's grape. That's why I like it. whereas like I feel like Cabernet, you know, there's certain things that can bother, you know, too much rain or something, not typically a problem in the areas that it's grown, but you know, that would be a problem for it. But it's not as sensitive to like slight weather variations.
Yeah.
And he was kind of saying how, you know, when you think of Nebbiolo or Pinot Noir, grapes that are very finicky with having that perfect temperament and the perfect environment for it to really reach its maximum potential.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of comparing this more to like, again, the Bordeaux varietals where those wines tend to more or less be able to sustain a lot more changes in their environment mm-hmm. and the climate and quote unquote own their terroir. I mean, they more or less...
So essentially what you're saying is like some terroir dictates the wine, but some wine can withstand the dictations of the terroir.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what he's, yeah.
They can more or less say,
they can,
you know,
stand up to the terroir.
You can have some slight differential from year to year and it's really not going to bother me. I'm going to be fine. I'll do my thing and I'll get you there.
That's the thing. It's like, you know, you drink the noble, quote unquote, noble grapes, but like there are so many other awesome, amazing grapes to be discovered. It's like what we were talking about before. Why you're comparing wine to black currants. I've never had a black currant or a lychee, but like if you were to try it, you wouldn't be disappointed. You'd be like, oh my God, I'm experiencing flavors I haven't experienced before. What a fun thing. It's the same with trying new wines. Like just, you know, if you're, you know, you get in a wine rut or if you're overwhelmed by going into a wine store and you just stick with what you know, just go to the next aisle. Try something different. See what it has to say. Figure it out. Have some fun. Be challenged, right?
I agree. Wholeheartedly.
Know, yeah.
But I also agree that your glass is much more full than mine. And I'm wondering why. Actually, Dave, your second glass is more full than mine. Your third glass is more full than mine.
And my first glass is...
a smidge more full. I'm gonna let you pass. I wasn't even going to mention it. I was going to let you get a freebie on that one.
All right. I'm gonna keep drinking this one a little bit.
All right. You do that. I might have to drink your second one. If
oh my God, that one! I'm just so impressed by that one.
I know mean, I'm excited to kind of taste them all mm-hmm. towards the end, around comparing and contrasting.
Yeah,
consecutively. You know, it's fun to kind of taste them in their own little individual bubble.
Yeah.
But when you taste them, you know, side by side. I think sometimes you really pick up nuance, mm-hmm. And I'm kind of excited about that.
Just a side note, Ray and I were talking about doing an Aglianico. You're Aglianico.
How vulgar are you?
How vulgar, Ray. We were talking about doing an Aglianico tasting for a while, and we just decided to make it a podcast, and it's fun, man. This is good. These wines are good. Give them. So,
all right.
This is the wine number 4. Should we just? Why don't we cheers it first this time?
Cheers. Now this smells pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Too.
So this is this wine is. I'm going to introduce this wine as well. This is made by Grifalco, which is by the Piccin brothers. Just a quick note about the Piccin brothers. They were winemakers originally from Toscana, so in Tuscany, but they made the choice to move down to Basilicata and especially to Vulture because of the terroir. And, you know, they wanted to have a hand in the future of the region. And I honestly think these wines are just going to get more expensive. Like, I don't think we're that far away from this. This is their DOCG wine. Sorry, this is their DOCG, their Superiore. And it's from a single vineyard called Mosquito. And the name of this wine is called Da Mosquito. Da means from.
Die Mosquito.
Yeah.
I say it all summer long.
Die Mosquito. So Da means from, Mosquito's the vineyard. So this is just from the Mosquito vineyard. And the reason why they wanted to do a singular bottling of this was because this vineyard has a clear taste and precise soul, and it describes perfectly the place where it came from. Just literally what you were just saying, how terroir-driven this stuff is.
Oh, I was like, infested with mosquitoes? That's yeah. No,
before. We were talking about before.
Malaria city.
Let's see some of the wine-making notes. Yeah, so they do the 3 years, but 24 months in 50 hectoliter barrel, followed by 12 months in bottle. I'm trying to think if there's any other important information.
Do they say what Grifalco is? Like, is it a griffin falcon?
Yeah, Falco is a falcon. I don't know what Grifalco is. I don't know.
Why didn't they name it like Grivulture? Or something like that. Like, why did they? I mean, they got like a bird creature on
it. Dude, I think you might be a label. Griffin and a falco. Maybe
Falcone. It's definitely Falcone? Some kind of bird, and it's got like this out of its chest, it's got a leaf growing.
Yeah,
I think it's a leaf.
Yeah, that's a really cool label. You're right.
I don't know, it's like a weird turkey beard.
Yeah, turkey.
You know, like that, if you've ever seen a turkey beard like up close and personal, you're like, what the hell is that thing growing out of the middle of its chest like that? Like, it's not growing off of its beak up at its like top. It's not like a human beard.
Yeah,
it's growing out like it's basically a long chest hair. It's like a horse tail growing out of its chest.
Right,
that's what a turkey beard
one
is.
One of my favorite things when we talk about wine, you talk about the label extensively, and I never give thought to labels. I think this is an important thing.
I didn't previously, and then I was like, oh yeah, Grifalco. Like, is it supposed to be a griffin falcon on the label? Because it's got a bird creature on there.
Yeah.
I'm like, it doesn't, it looks more pigeon-like, honestly.
It does.
But it has that leaf something or other coming out of its chest. I don't know. I would love an explanation as to what this thing is, but I will tell you that the juice smells good.
And yeah, I'm
about to taste it.
Falco is hawk or falcon, and gris, well, maybe
well,
from
I didn't take Gricos. Italian, but I had that suspicion.
Maybe it's Gricos, because their other wine, their like DOC wine is called Gricos. So I don't know. All right, so here we go. See, they all have a quality, an Aglianico quality to it.
They're all really good, though. I have to say, for outside the corked bottle, which you can't blame the corked bottle, but outside of that wine, every single one was
outstanding,
very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's funny. So this is 2016. The Serpara, the Re Manfredi, was 2015. So only a year difference. But I just feel like this one's just a lot brighter. Right, it's just a lot lighter, not lighter as far as tannins and body, but just like there's like brighter fruits. Maybe still like
reminds me a little of the like if Titolo was more finesse,
the second wine,
and less rustic. I feel like it might be kind
more
of
that.
Going towards
yeah, totally.
Like there's again a richness to it,
yeah,
but that doesn't have the same like vibe as the
because this is aged in big Serpara. Barrels, yeah, it's aged in bigger barrels. There's less oak. The Serpara is aged in
new, like small berries,
yeah, and newer oak. So I guess that's therein lies the oak effect, right? So I don't know, man. I think I'm kind of ready to put all these together.
Are you going to make
a blend,
a personal blend,
make a wine five? So it's looking at them all, they're just all pretty similar in color.
I mean, color-wise, yeah, there's practically no difference.
You can't tell the difference between
if you were just looking at it, you're like, yeah, no difference. That's one thing that, again, I feel like Nebbiolo and Pinot Noir, that's not necessarily true. I feel like you can find producers of Nebbiolo and definitely can find Pinot Noir where it's like some are really deep, some are really, really light and transparent. And again, with Nebbiolo, when you're thinking about it, you got to really think Nebbiolo. Don't think Barolo. Like, you know, you have Barbaresco, Barolo,
Lange,
Nebbiolo, Lange, Nebbiolo,
Gattinara.
It's like you're going to see just from the aging differences that difference in the intensity of colors. But here, it's like even though DOCG definitely got more time in, you know, in most of these cases, going to have more time in both barrel and bottle.
Mm-hmm.
The color contrast is not that different. I mean, the fruit itself has a lot of tannin and color, and there's no, you know, that was one of the things that I think we mentioned earlier, but, you know, they talked about, you know, they sent this up to the north, and it's like, I could see why.
Mm-hmm.
If you needed to take a wine that was really pale and a little anemic.
Wait, say like, that because we were talking about that before the pods, before we started recording.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes in the earlier 20th century, some of the weaker vintages, you know, Northern Italy would pull in wines from Bordeaux or wines from Southern Italy, particularly Alianico, and they would use that to essentially fortify and bring more body and color to their wines and vintages that were, you know, less than stellar.
Yeah.
And you can totally see why. I'm like, it has a lot of that characteristic of Bordeaux, but with that little bit of pop from the acidity.
I wonder if that has any reason to do with them calling it the Barolo of the South. That might have.
I don't know. But yeah. I kind of think of it as the Bordeaux of Italy.
Yeah, I think that's a much better, you know, and I don't drink nearly as much Bordeaux as you. But I think that is a much better representation.
I will tell you, when I think of foods that I'd want to have it with, I think of a lot of foods that I'd want to have Bordeaux with. It's mm-hmm. like, I would replace this with Bordeaux if I was trying to think, like, somebody said they had a bottle of Alianico, and what should I do with it? I'm mm-hmm. like, have you had Bordeaux? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you pair that with? I paired it with, you know, whatever. And it's like, do that with this.
So I just drank through all these quickly. Just like little sips, miniature sips of each. And like having this experience, this is like one of the first times where I like, I just feel like they're all painted with the same brush, just like different, you know, levels of pigment or whatever. Yeah. And it's really cool to see that.
And it's oil paint, yeah. Not watercolor.
Or latex. It's not latex. It's oil paint. But you know what I mean? Like there is a common thread in every one of these glasses.
What was those little, like, what are they called, like pastels?
Pastels.
Those little, like, they almost look like crayons.
Yeah, pastels.
And that's what they're called?
Yeah.
I never see them. I only saw them in school, and I would never see them since.
Is it like charcoal?
No. They're made of something soft.
Yeah. Why am I saying charcoal?
Charcoal is charcoal.
Yeah. But they this don't, is do, like, do people do their charcoal pencils? Am I making that
Yeah,
up?
There's charcoal okay, pencils. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But pastels were like soft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I always loved, you know, drawing with them because that, I don't even, it wasn't, actually, if anything, I think my drawing sucked worse in pastel than it did with anything else. But I think it's almost like when you're writing with an ink pen and that like fluidity of writing, you almost want to keep like doing something with it, even though you're like, I already signed my name, but I don't need to keep doing stuff with it. But it's like, well, I'll do a little doodle at the end because it feels nice. It's just so fluid. Kind of same thing with pastel.
Absolutely.
It brings me back to this because I feel like
anyway,
that body is like, it's got this luxurious heft to it that kind of, you know, seduces you a little.
It does.
If you're like somebody who's like, I don't really like big wines. It's like, pair this at the end after you've had a couple of their wines to like get your palate acclimated and I think you're gonna really enjoy this.
I don't know, dude. I think that's great. That is a great
I think you have summary. Way too many wines in your glass though.
I'm trying, dude. I just went through them all again. I'm like going through them and it's how can, like, I want to do like some sort of conclusive remarks with Alianico, because it's not one of those wines, like when you talk about Cab, you're like, You get like pencil shavings, green pepper, black currant. Talk about Pinot, you get like florality and cranberries and red cherries. Like, what are we getting from this? Is there a conclusive, are there some like conclusive aromatics that we can get from these? Or is that too bold of a thing to?
No, I think you do. I think you get a lot of black fruit. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's blackberry, some black currant. There's also a reduced like black cherry or even red raspberry, where it's kind of, you've reduced it. The tartness is a little less tart, but it's
like
got
you made
that,
a pie out
you know,
of it or something. I like, yeah.
First and foremost, the thing that I notice in Aglianico, and I when we were talking about doing this tasting, and I was thinking like, well, what do I remember from the few Aglianicos I've had? The two things that jumped out to me, and again, I had only had a few, mm-hmm. so tonight I've probably
doubled
what I had. And the two things that jumped out to me was brambly blackberry and chocolate. Mm. And chocolate, I don't get a ton of times on a lot of wines. It's something that a lot of times people talk about, but there's actually not too many
especially
wines that I feel like have like a bitter chocolate.
The Re Manfredi.
These have a bitter chocolate that is very enticing.
Yeah, I agree. I also think for me, like I just get lavender. I think if I'm looking for herbs,
there's that dried herbaceous note to it, and a little bit of like a sweet cedar or something like that.
Wow, yeah. Even like a bit of rosemary, a little bit of rosemary on there.
But to me, the chocolate is probably the thing the biggest distinction. It's like I really don't find it in a whole lot of wines. It's pretty consistent with the Aglianico. Yeah, and if I was blind tasting it, I'd be like, if I taste chocolate, Aglianico. It's either Aglianico or something that's like... So, really tasting kind of like Aglianico.
So you know, like there are the testable grapes that you can... blind someone on. I feel like for me and you personally, we can add Aglianico to the table. Let's officially
but
put
don't
it on
do
there.
Three Aglianicos. Don't do like Terrassi, Double
that,
Torre.
That would be mean. That would just be mean.
You're like, tell me where it's from, and I'd be like,
yeah, that would be
I'm
so
SOL,
mean.
Man.
But speaking of which, maybe one of the next tastings we do just for fun is we compare the different Aglianicos just for the hell of it.
Have you gone back to the Elena?
Yes. I think the Elena, it's just funny. It still holds up to the last two.
Yeah, it still smells great, but the rusticity of it shows up more, I think, after having
the others. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the last two were definitely my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I like them all. I can't say any of them did not like. I almost felt like between... You made the point about the way they matured these two wines, the two superiores, and I like them both. I mean, there's a rustic charm to the Grifalco that mm-hmm. I'm like... It lies in between the other superiore and the Elena.
You're so right about yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, for somebody who like, you know, if you like Bartolo Mascarello from Barolo, there's a rusticity to it that is kind of traditional. I feel like that Grifalco is more traditional. The other one is slightly more modern, but I would not by any means really like say, oh, it's modern, because mm-hmm. the oak is very much in check. It just is a little more present. It's a little more voluptuous, but they're both delicious for various purposes. And I almost feel like if somebody's more of a person who's like a Napa guy, as I drink the Serpara, if you're more of a like old world guy or girl,
Grifalco. Yeah. And if you want something newish and fun, do the Titolo.
And if you want to spell something backwards,
Pipoli,
or
Ilo Pip. And with that, we're going to end this podcast just like we started. Thank
backwards.
You, everyone. We're going to go dip. Well, have a good one, you guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this Four Glasses to Finish episode about Aglianico, a grape that is, in our opinion, greatly underappreciated. If you haven't done so yet, pour yourself a glass or four of this wonderful wine. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Four Glasses to Finish with the number four and subscribe to our podcast. Thanks again for listening. And remember, the best wine is wine that is shared.